Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training center in Denver, Colorado, this is the Dog Doctor. Committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogdoctorradio.com. The Dog Doctor is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now here is your host, Dr. Robert Forto, the Dog Doctor.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You're listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show, brought to you by Twine Group Media and presented by Denver Dog Works. We welcome everybody out there listening to visit our website at denverdogworks.com. We are at the Furry Scurry today, so we're doing a pre-recorded show for both the Dog Doctor Radio Show and Must You Huskies. We're going to do a little bit of cross-promotion on both of the shows today. So if you're a fan of one, hopefully you'll become a fan of the other. In just a couple of minutes, Michelle is going to give you a little bit of the history about the Denver Dumb Friends League. But before we do, we're going to talk about something new that is coming out just in about a week or two. It's called the Howler News. The Howler News is going to be an online journal for you and your dog that's going to have particular topics every week about all things regarding dogs. And before we get into that, I want to introduce my co-host, business partner, and wife, Michelle. How are you?
I'm great. Happy May Day to you.
It is May Day. It's the middle of spring here in Denver. We got a little bit of a dusting of snow just last night, so maybe we'll get one last snowstorm before the death of summer is upon us here in Denver.
The death or the depth?
Death. D-E-A-T-H. I hate summer.
Summer in Colorado is not that bad.
So anyway, Michelle, how are you doing this morning?
I'm great. I am happy to report that the Denver Dumb Friends League is putting on the Furry Scurry for its 16th year, and it has the Dumb Friends League has been in existence for 100 years, and if I could just take a moment of everybody's time and give you a little bit of history, the Denver Dumb Friends League was founded in 1910 by Mrs. Jean Milne Gower. The Denver Dumb Friends League was founded and directed by women. Mrs. Margaret Brady, who ran a boarding kennel for dogs, agreed in 1911 to use her home and yard as the league's first shelter. Dr. Mary Bates joined the board of directors in 1911. After interning at Cook County Hospital in her native Chicago, she moved to Denver to set up a family practice. Dr. Bates devoted countless hours to animal advocacy and to the league. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to stutter. Between 1913 and 1926, no shelter existed for the Dumb Friends League. The shelter's address was listed as Dr. Bates Medical Office. In 1948, following a fund drive, the first shelter was built on Santa Fe and remained there until 1974, where it was moved to its current location on Quebec Street. Molly Brown was a life member. The term life member was bestowed on anyone who made a single donation of $50. And if some of you can remember, Molly Brown was a survivor of the Titanic, and she resided here in Denver for the last years of her life. The Dumb Friends League is celebrating 100 years today, May 1st, 2010. Denver Dog Works applauds its founders, women who took a risk to do the right thing for our furry friends, setting the standards for today's shelters. Their motto, every creature, brute, as well as human, has the right to food, drink, and shelter, to work, rest, and play, to comfort and happiness, to free from unnecessary pain.
You know, the Denver Dumb Friends League is an exceptional place. When I went there to tour right when we first moved to Denver, I was taken aback by just how nice that place is. Most people think of a shelter to look very similar to a dog kennel with chain link runs and lots of noise. And this place more looks like a zoo. It is a very nice place indeed.
Absolutely. And it was renovated and expanded in 2003, making it the shelter that we know today. Like I said, the Furry Scurry has only been ran in Washington Park since 1994. And so they've been in existence since 1910, doing all of these things to benefit homeless animals without a huge fundraiser.
That's right. And the Furry Scurry is one of the biggest events for dog kennels or dog shelters in the Denver area, and we've taken part in it every year that we have been here in Denver since 2006, and we are happy to support this shelter. And I always want to mention that they have a very very nice and serene place behind the Denver Dome Friends League, a memorial for pets that have passed on. And I think that we're going to utilize that when our old guy, Aneke, passes on as well.
Yes, it's a beautiful pet cemetery. They have upkept it, and you don't have to just lay to rest your rescued friend there.
That's right. You can come to visit. They've got very nice benches where you can sit on and all sorts of stuff. So if you're looking for a place when your pet does pass on, the Denver Dumb Friends League is a very nice place to do so.
So today's topic is regarding breed, how to pick your breeder.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in just a second. But before we do, I want to talk about the Howler News that's going to be coming out in just a couple of weeks. The Howler News is going to be an online journal, very similar to a newspaper. And what we're going to have on there is advertising space. We're going to have classified ads for dog training classes and equipment and other things, upcoming events, that sort of thing. So if you're a reader or familiar with yourhub.com, it's going to be set up very similar to that. And one of the key features to the Yourhub site as well as Howler News is we're going to have guest bloggers and submitters. And we have two very fine writers on our staff right now, Leah Morris, who has written a very well-written segment of articles about raw pet diets. And we've had just recently a 70-year-old plus musher come on named Al McGraw, who wrote an article last week. McGaw, who wrote an article last week about canine communication, and that got a tremendous response. So we have asked Al to come on as a weekly contributor as well.
You know, I think we should invite him onto the radio show. I'm sure he would be bringing a nice spin to our show.
Once we get this Skype plus GarageBand issue worked out, we're going to be having guests back on our shows like we used to. So I'm just going to have to make sure that that works well so we can have that up and running when we do have our guests.
That sounds wonderful. So what's upcoming for you? I know that you're planning on doing a lot of tours, speaking engagements to high schools and community colleges. Tell us a little bit about that so that some of our listeners that know some teachers or some board of directors at these schools might be able to get in touch with me and help me out.
Yeah, one of the most important things that we're going to be doing over the summer is talking to high school sports teams, and we're going to talk about mental preparation for excellence. It's an entirely different aspect of training. You know, most sports are involved with physical preparedness, but I do a keynote speech on mental preparedness as well. It's all about subconscious training and making sure you know where your goals are and that sort of thing. And it's something I've been doing for quite a while now, not only for myself but other people that are involved in the sport of dogs. But now we're going to branch out a little bit and talk about mental preparedness for sports.
So kind of giving the kids that win in everything attitude that's going to take them not only through their athletic careers but into college and life as well.
Yeah, so that's going to be our Dream Chaser Leadership Series, and that will be coming out in the summer. So if you have a child in high school sports, or if you know, if you are a coach or know of a coach, just contact us at live@dogdoctorradio.com, and I would love to come to speak at your event.
And, you know, for those of you that are fans of our other show, Must You Huskies, we will be having a show on tomorrow discussing new and upcoming ways to train your dog in the off season.
Well, actually, we're going to parallel with this show. So you're going to get two shows in one here. And on our Must You Huskies, we're going to talk about how to choose a breeder. And we are breeders of Siberian Huskies as well as German Shepherds. So we're going to just parallel this with our show, Must You Huskies, in just a second. Michelle, anything else you want to add here on the Dog Doctor?
No, I am looking forward to a great turnout at the Furry Scurry this year. It's always a lot of fun. Lots of characters out there with their dogs.
You know, if you can't make it out to the Furry Scurry at Washington Park, they do have another event in September called the Wagon Trail, which is at Castlewood Park, I believe it's called, in between Lone Tree and Castle Pines on 25 here in Denver.
Yeah, and that is a beautiful park to come out to as well.
It is. So we'll see you at some of these events, and if you have any upcoming issues with training or you would like us to be at your event, again, contact us at live@dogdoctorradio.com. As I always say, never forget your dreams. We will see you next week at 9:30. Stay on the dial here. We're going to come right back into Mush You Huskies, and we're going to talk about how to choose a breeder.
Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training center in Denver, Colorado, presents Mush You Huskies, a show about dog-powered sports and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Mush You Huskies is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Here's your host, Dr. Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. We are back. You were just listening to the Dog Doctor Radio Show, again, part of Twine Group Media and just one of our other arms of our business. And we want to welcome everybody that's listening now to Mush You Huskies. This is a biweekly show on Twine Group Media, and you can find it at teamaneke.com. But before we get into that, I want to mention that if you were listening to the Dog Doctor Show, we have a show every week at 9:30 a.m. on Saturday mornings for the Dog Doctor Radio Show, hosted by myself and my co-host, Michelle. Michelle, how are you?
I am good. Happy post-May Day. Running two shows at once is a little confusing, I'm sure, to our listeners as well as to me. But I'm looking forward to this Mush You Husky show. It's been a while since we've done one.
You know, the reason we're doing it this way is we recorded an hour and 15-minute show for the Dog Doctor Radio Show just a few minutes ago, and the technology that we have is not only cutting edge, but it also gives us a blip every now and then, and we lost the entire show. So what I want to do today is I want to just hybridize both shows, both Mush You Huskies and the Dog Doctor Radio Show, and bring it into one for this week. And what we're going to talk about is how to choose a breeder. I know a lot of people that listen to Mush You Huskies are breeders of their own for their own dog sledding teams, but we also want to capture people that are not breeders and are getting interested into this sport and bringing up a fan base based on that. And they may be looking for that first sled dog, or they may be looking for that dog that can pull them on a cart, or they may be looking for that dog that can help him out in tracking or other types of sports. Mush You Huskies is all about dog-powered sports, whether that be skiing, mushing, skijoring, bike-joring, all sorts of other sports. And you want to make sure you have a very well-bred dog that can help you out when you are doing these sports, and it is imperative that you know what kind of dog you're getting.
Absolutely. And, you know, not just that, but we always want to put it out there on all of our avenues that, you know, choosing the right dog for you is always a better thing than just choosing a dog. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be out there picking up a rescue or a mixed breed. That might be the right dog for you and what you're asking that dog to become for you.
That's right. And as you guys know, if you're interested in any type of dog-powered sport or just the family companion, all dog breeds are not alike, and I know Michelle does a lot of breed referrals, and she does those for a reason. She goes to shelters with some of our clients. She helps out pick the proper breed for the family and for the sport that they're getting involved in. The title of my book upcoming is called Run with Poodles, and it's a play on a couple of different things, but it's about taking what you have and succeeding with that.
Absolutely, and not only that, but Run with Poodles is a good segue for me to say what I need to say, and that is a lot of times I will have people call me after the fact that they've picked out their new puppy, and now I'm going to design their training routine for them for the life of the puppy, which is very important when you're choosing your breed.
So what exactly is a breed referral? And a lot of the questions you will ask other breeders when you're doing these breed referrals. But if a person's interested and they want to do the right thing and they come across breed referrals and they come across our website, either teamaneke.com or Denver Dog Works, and it mentions breed referrals, what is that?
Well, for me, it's kind of like I become a broker between the buyer and the breeder that they're looking into. I'm going to ask that breeder questions as a breeder would expect, but breeder-to-breeder type of questions. Most of the time, especially if you're a first-time puppy owner or purchaser, you're going to ask silly questions like, how come this ear is floppy and this one isn't? Or, you know, you're going to pick the puppy that is constantly running over to you or the one that doesn't quite move enough, and that not necessarily the right puppy is being chosen by this first-time puppy buyer. So when I go and pick out a puppy for somebody, I'm doing temperament testing as well as other things based on what they've told me that they want this puppy to grow up and do for them.
That's exactly right. And if you're doing it on your own, there are several questions that you should ask a breeder, and they should be 100% honest and forthright in their answers. And we're going to get into those here in just a second. But, again, we want to recommend if you're just looking for that perfect family dog, don't forget the shelters. We just talked a little bit about the Denver Dumb Friends League. Excellent shelter, and there are all kinds of rescues and shelters throughout this country, throughout the world, that can help you find just the right dog, purebred and mixed. So don't forget those companions as well.
You know, and one thing I want to say is one of the best sports out there for rescued breeds is flyball. It's absolutely one of the best things you can get your mixed rescued dog into is flyball.
As well as rally. And mm-hmm. In just a couple of weeks, we're going to revamp our behavior modification sessions and program. And with that, we're going to do a little bit of pre-testing with dogs in rally at Denver Dog Works. And I haven't really mentioned that to Michelle. It's just a little bit of a teaser so far, but rally is another great sport to get your dog involved in when you are training your furry friend.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Robert has read this or not, but the AKC is starting to open up some larger areas of their competitions to mixed and rescued dogs, and just so happens that Rally is one of the first ones. They are opening that up pretty soon. They've sent out some newsletters to their evaluators for Canine Good Citizen and letting us know that if we refer clients to them, that we're going to get a little compensation back for that.
So, as you guys know, you are listening to Mush You Huskies, part of Twine Group Media, and with that, we are dog sledders, dog mushers, dog drivers, whatever you want to call us, that's what we do. And with that, we are a premier Siberian Husky breeder. And with that, we want to make sure that we are placing dogs not only on our teams, but our teams that we are adopting dogs out to or selling dogs to go to the right homes. And with that, we want to make sure that not only are we prepared, but our buyers are prepared as well. So I want to run down about 10 or 12 questions about what you should ask a pertinent breeder of a world-class purebred dog. The first question is, and what we're going to do is we're going to ask these questions, and Michelle is just going to comment on them just a bit so we keep this on a good time frame. But these are the questions that you should ask. And the nice thing about a podcast is you can download it and keep it for as long as you want. You're not listening to the radio show driving in traffic. You're listening to a show that you can keep forever. So the first question is, are you a member of a breed parent club, and do you follow the parent club code of ethics? And do you have a copy of these ethics on hand that I could review, meaning the purchaser?
Well, first of all, I need to explain that the breed parent club would be the Siberian Husky Club of America or the German Shepherd Club of America. That would be your breed parent club. And, yes, we belong to a lot of breed parent clubs, not just because we breed different types of dogs. We breed German Shepherds as well as Siberian Huskies. But we're members of those clubs because I do breed referrals, and I want to keep in touch with certain breeders that I have found that I like their techniques, I like their ethics, and I like what they're producing.
And as you guys know that are listening as mushers, most of the mushing teams out there are using a hybrid-type dog, whether it be an Alaskan Husky or other types of dogs that are used. So there aren't parent clubs for those, but as a racer of Siberians, we want to make sure that our Siberians are up to snuff with the breed standards for the Siberian Husky.
Right, but even though there isn't a breed parent club out there for Alaskan Huskies, which is typically used in the Iditarod and mushing events around the world, the mushers themselves still are putting those standards out there. You know, they're not selling unproven lines. If the dog can't run, they're not going to breed it.
One of the good things that that they do at Mushing Magazine, every month they have what they call Super Dogs. And what this is an expose on a particular kennel. Of course, some of the masters in dog sledding, whether it be Lance Mackey or Martin Bucer or somebody that is very well known, they talk about the Super Dogs from that kennel, and they talk about which dog was bred to which dog and so forth. So there are other ways to follow what is going on with the mixed breeds. Question number two, do you belong to any breed club or breed organization? And what that means is, are you a part of any clubs that regard the particular breeds? We're members of the Mountain States Dog Training Club, which is competition obedience and agility club. We're also members of ISDRA, which is the International Sled Dog Racing Association. All of these clubs are based on what the dog is bred to do. So make sure that if the breeder does breed purebred dogs for a particular thing, not only for companion dogs, that they're involved in these other types of breed organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe not just breed organizations, but find out what they're involved in. If your breeder is breeding sport dogs, they should be involved in that type of sport.
Yes. I always say practice what you preach, and that's important in dog breeding as well. Question number three, how many different dogs do you breed? How many litters of each breed do you have a year? And what are the age of the dogs that you breed each time? Now, this is important because we don't want the typical puppy mill scenario, having Mr. and Mrs. Johnson breeding poodles and German Shepherds and Pomeranians and Labradors all in the backyard.
Well, and it's not just that. You know, I'm not going to knock every single puppy mill out there. If they are breeding multiple types of dogs and they only have one litter available at a time, that's a different story. For instance, we breed two different types of dogs, but we don't have them for sale at the same time.
I'm against puppy mills, so do you want to clarify that just a little
bit?
Well,
what I'm saying is you can have a breeder that breeds three or four different types of dogs and not be in that puppy mill scenario that you and I don't like. The puppy mill scenario typically has hundreds of puppies available at any time of the year, and they are selling them out of the back of their car, they are selling them in the pet stores, and they are selling them out of the newspapers. That's what a puppy mill is to me. Now, if you have a lot of the dog show confirmation people will have a couple of different breeds that they are breeding, but they won't have as many litters available at the same time.
Next question, what are the known health problems with this breed, and what steps are you taking to minimize the chances of these problems occurring in your litters?
Right, that goes to the testing that you should be doing, especially if you're going to be breeding or looking for a purebred puppy. If you're looking into a mixed breed, the tests aren't going to be there as often, but they can be. For instance, Labradoodles are a mixed breed, and they're being tested for hip dysplasia as well as their eyes. So you're looking for the hip dysplasia test as well as the eye test in most of your dog breeds today.
A good reputable breeder will make sure that any breeding that he does, breeding starts well before the puppies are ever born, and that includes these testing, good nutrition, and good conditioning.
Absolutely.
The next question is, do you have test results, for example, OFA papers for testing hips on both parents that I could review?
Yes, we do as breeders, and if I am doing a breed referral for you, I will recommend that we either see both parents on premises and review their paperwork, and if the stud is not available on premises to look at, I'm going to ask for that person's information so that I can contact them and get copies of the paperwork and possibly see him as well.
A good friend of ours breeds boxers, and she just recently bred one of her new dogs, Story. And one of the things that she did that I found remarkable is she did all of the testing before she even contacted the stud. She made sure that the dog was checked for hips and eyes, but also the heart and everything else to make sure her dog was up to snuff before the breeder was ever contacted.
Right, and that's a good way to start. And, you know, our Leah is new to breeding, and she's taken a lot of advice from both you and I.
Next question, what requirements must a puppy buyer meet to receive one of your puppies?
That depends on the breeder. For us, we don't even sell our puppies until they're 12 weeks of age, and we go through a rigorous interviewing process with them, especially if we're going to do it in a pet situation versus a working situation. Obviously, when we're breeding our huskies, we're typically selling musher to musher, and it's a little bit different world. But when I'm breeding my German Shepherds and they're going to become a service dog or the potential to become a service dog, the interviewing process is much more involved.
So with that, a lot of breeders do home visits, and that is important if you think it's necessary as a breeder. And don't be alarmed if you're trying to buy a dog that the breeder wants to come out to your home to see what you have to offer.
Absolutely, and don't be alarmed. Credit checks and background checks are becoming more and more of the norm these days with reputable breeders as well.
Next set of questions, actually, but relating to the same topic, do you require a contract? If so, what are the terms and guarantees? And what does your contract say about hereditary problems? What type of registration, limited or full? And what about spaying and neutering?
What I have to say about that is every breeder's contract is going to be different. I would say buyer beware. If a contract is not put out there in front of you, I would question the breeder's reputation.
Many reputable breeders have their contracts and their terms and guarantees right on their website, so you can look those over about what they're going to do if a dog comes down with hip dysplasia or has bad eyes or bad hips or God forbid, one dies. What are their guarantees with that? What do they do for registration? There are two types of registrations with the American Kennel Club, limited and unlimited. And limited means you cannot breed your dog. A lot of pet quality dogs will be given what I call the orange papers. And what that means is you cannot breed that dog no matter what. And then, of course, the purple papers are the unlimited registration, or full registration as it is called. Therefore, you can breed that dog. But again, just because a dog has papers does not mean it is a dog worthy of breeding.
That's right. And not only that, but you guys need to seek out a veterinarian and a dog trainer before you go talk with the breeder, and you know, while you're reviewing their websites, there's going to be some language on there that you might not fully understand that a veterinarian and a dog trainer or a breed referral person like myself is going to understand and can explain to you better.
And don't be alarmed, again, when you're looking through these conditions and terms, if they say that spaying and neutering and or neutering is required. Many, many reputable breeders do this because they want to make sure that they preserve their line of dogs. And by asking you to spay or neuter your pet, they are doing so. And typically, a lot of breeders will withhold the registration papers until documentation is produced that this dog is spayed or neutered.
That's absolutely right. And not only that, but there are circumstances where the breeder will let go of a dog that they decide later that they want to breed themselves, and they might put that clause in their contract that they have the right to come back and take this dog from you for a period of time for breeding purposes.
So, again, this is not your backyard, underneath the table type breeding. This is a very reputable breeder that does this because they care about the breed and they want to promote and preserve the breed that they are working with. We see all the time people selling purebred labs at Walmart in the back of their car for $200 or $300, or they'll be selling them in the newspaper, AKC Register German Shepherds $500, and come by, only two left. So any of those types of things, I would say, again, buyer beware. You want to make sure that a dog that you're buying is an investment that you're ready to make not only financially but also emotionally and in terms of time. This is a commitment that you should be prepared to make for 10 to 15 years of your life.
You know, and that's right. That's why I always tell people, you know, thank you for calling us. I'm glad that you stepped out of the box and you're calling somebody that has knowledge about dogs, but also shop around for your veterinarian as well before you buy your dog.
Exactly right. So the next question is, do you take dogs back at any time in their lifetime if a pet owner decides he or she no longer wants the dog. A reputable breeder will do so. And when I talk to people about buying purebred dogs, this is a very important question because, as you guys know, things happen in life. And we mentioned this was a 10 to 15-year commitment. People get divorced. People move. People get transferred. And oftentimes, dogs are seen as disposable, and that's not how they should be. Instead of saying, okay, let's just take Max to the shelter, which, by the way, is the most popular dog breed name in America, Max, we want to make sure that these dogs are placed appropriately for this period of time. Michelle, what do you have to say about this?
Well, you know, we've always had a clause in there that says the puppy or dog can be returned at any time throughout his lifetime, no questions asked. And I still uphold that belief, and that's in our contract still. You know, as reputable breeders, you don't want your line, especially if they weren't spayed or neutered, to end up on the streets or end up at the neighbor's house or end up in a shelter, you know, with God knows how many other litters out there that are now has a broken line.
That's exactly right. So our next question, and you touched on this just a second ago, about what age puppies are placed into the new home and should they have their first set of vaccinations. Every state is a little bit different, but almost every state in the country, at least in the United States, has an eight-week placement period, meaning they have to be at least 8 weeks old before they can be sold or bought. We typically sell our dogs between 10 to 12 weeks, and we make sure that all of our dogs are produced with documentation of vaccination.
Right. Not only are they not sold but until they're 10 to 12 weeks of age, we fully vaccinate the dogs before they are sold, and we crate train them and house train them as well. And we have found more success with our dog owners by doing this because it takes away a little bit of the burden of responsibility right from the get-go with them. Having a crate trained, house trained puppy is always a better idea than not. Also, going ahead and getting all of the vaccinations done prior to them being sold ensures that they're getting the same types of vaccines from the same veterinarian, because sometimes when the breeder starts off at their vet and then you take the puppy to your vet, the vaccines are actually started over again.
That's exactly right. So those are the questions that I would typically ask a breeder if I was buying dogs. But I want to let you guys know that there is no national registry of any type of dog breeding breeders out there. There are no regulations. I know here in the state of Colorado, the Department of Agriculture will license and or certify breeders that breed, I believe it's over 25 litters a year, which is a big organization. And then there's also another step to that for breeders that breed over 100 litters a year. So we're talking commercial breeders here, but most breeders are not that. They're very small scale, or what I call hobby breeders, that are doing it to promote their breed and to excel their lines.
And that's the way that it should be. And, you know, I just want to say that here in the United States, we don't have any regulations on how a puppy is bred or basically what happens to it after that. But a good friend of ours and fellow breeder did a show for us a few months back, and she really touched on how Europe has specific regulations, especially for their dogs there. And she breeds German Shepherds, so she's very familiar with that breed. But she mentioned that they can't even breed the male or the female unless they've passed at least Schutzhund 1.
And that is the German Shepherd that is required to do that. And I think that the United States should do so as well. We're doing it a little bit backwards. We're breeding purebred dogs, and we're giving them registrations, but we're not testing them beforehand. So what is the use? And I'm sure there's a lot of opinions out there for and against that, and we welcome those opinions at live@dogdoctorradio.com. Let's hear how you guys breed your dogs and or buy purebred dogs, because we're interested to know, and maybe we'll talk about it in a future show. Also, we want to make sure that people that are buying dogs understand that most breeders are not doing this for a profit. The average loss, net loss for a litter of dogs is about $1,500 if you take into account all of the costs that are required to have a successful breeding and placement of their dogs. And that is not something that people do for a living. Again, they're doing it to promote their breed. And I know we have a lot of mushers that are listening out there on Mushu Huskies, and we're really interested in finding out what you guys do in terms of breeding your dogs and what type of programs you have. And let's promote this as much as we can, because this sport is about education. If we cannot educate our fellow mushers or our people that are getting involved in these dog-powered sports, whether they are mushing or skijoring or bike-joring or hiking with their dog or tracking or whatever, these guys are going into this sport just like we were many years ago, novices. They don't know what's going on. They want to have proper education. And remember, these are our competitors and our friends of the future, and we want to make sure that they have quality dogs in this sport so we can not only preserve the sport, but make sure that we are promoting it and excelling the sport as well.
And that's what this is all about. That's why we do Mushu Huskies. That's why we do the Dog Doctor Radio Show. It's actually why we are in business as Denver Dog Works.
Yes, it's to promote the relationship of canines and humans, whether that is the couch potato dog that's laying around watching Monday Night Football with you or competing in the Iditarod. We want to make sure that that relationship is sound, and that relationship starts well before that puppy is born.
Absolutely. So what's on the agenda for the next Mushu Huskies?
2 weeks from today, Sunday the 16th, I believe, we're going to talk about urban mushing and other sports for dogs. I know it is the off-season for a lot of dog sledders. I just heard that they got a nice dumping of snow up in Alaska just the other day, so they're still running dogs up there. But for everybody else, most of the snow is melted. So what do you do with your dogs? Do you compete in rally? Do you compete in karting events? Do you do competition obedience? Do you do fly ball? Just about any canine athlete can do cross sports, whether they're doing mushing in the winter and fly ball in the summer. You know, that's an excellent way for not only muscle development, but cardio development and stamina as well.
As well as eye coordination and focus. Fly ball is a great exercise, but I understand that a lot of the guys are in the midst of puppy training right now.
Yeah, and every mushroom does a little bit different. Every dog trainer does a little bit different. But I found that a sport like rally builds up a tremendous amount of communication between the musher and or dog owner and the dog. I mean, that is a tremendous amount of focus and a tremendous amount of relationship building that you have with your dog.
Well, for those mushers out there that like to keep their dogs a little wilder, I don't see them doing rally with their dogs.
And I tend to have one of the more wild teams out there.
You do, but I usually train all of our puppies and then you break them.
Yeah, so there is a definite style on the way that people do mush with their dogs, whether it be the very European type of mushing where the dogs are stoic and they will stand on a line for a period of time without any type of command and or correction. And then you have dogs that are just a little bit natural, as I call it, that are harness banging and ready to go. And as long as there's an equal distance of that wildness and tameness, you will have a very well-rounded team.
Absolutely. So get out there and mush, and we will talk to you soon. Listen to the Dog Doctor Radio Show as well on Saturdays at 9:30, and Mushu Huskies comes at you biweekly on Sundays.
So, as I always say, never forget your dreams, and we'll see you on the trail. This is Robert Forto. You're listening to Team Aneke's Mushu Huskies and the Dog Doctor Radio Show hybridized together here on May 1st, 2010. We are at the Furry Scurry, so we're scrambling and we're scurrying to make sure that we get our shows out promoted the appropriate way. Michelle, anything else before we close?
Never forget your dreams.
Never forget your dreams. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.